Court. Hello, everyone. I'm Leslie Cornwell, certified nurse midwife with Midwifery Business Consultation. I have Maylene Hagenberger on with me today. We were having so much fun chatting. I could just talk to Maylene for hours. I'm like, we got to hit record so everybody could hear these wonderful things we're chatting about. So, Maylene, thank you so much for being on with me today.
My pleasure. My pleasure as always.
Yeah. So Maylene, if anybody doesn't know her background, she did a suturing training and an introduction to the Maylene Hagenberger speculum. It's now the Hagenberger retractor for an amazing invention that she created. We are going to tell the excitement that the US has finally done FDA approval. So now midwives and hospitals can start using her wonderful invention. So we'll definitely put a link down below for people to see that one from 2 years ago and connect to her amazing suturing training. But yeah, Maylene, if you want to tell us about your background and all the amazing things you've been doing since we chatted last.
Well, thank you so much. Well, I'm located right now in Denmark. It's 6 p.m. here. Easter's here, so but I've been at the hospital today to do some repairs. I've actually had visits from Holland. Four clinicians came to see the Hagenberger, which is always an honor when people come traveling to see it. So, but my background is nursing. I'm trained as a nurse here in Denmark. And then I studied midwifery in Norway, in Bergen in Norway. And I've always had a keen interest in that very, very last part of labor, the suturing part, the diagnosing. I think it involves three organs. It's the bladder, the vagina, and the anus, and it's something that we have to live with for the rest of our lives. So I think the price that I've seen women pay for a wrong diagnosis or a poor repair is huge, and it's a there's so much taboo. So that idea kind of involved, and I also have an international background. I lived in four different countries among the US. I was in the US for 4 years, and it just staggered me that no matter where you were, whether you were in the US, Denmark, or somewhere in the Caribbean, women were sutured exactly the same way, with the same lack of training. And with also the prioritizing of the repair was very low. So it's it the repair and the suturing were in were also it was very often it was talked about as cleaning up. You know, she just needs a few stitches and then out, or she just needs a few stitches and then she's done. And I think that is a very sad way for something that is very important, something that you have to, it involves your intimacy life, it involves your self-esteem, it involves organ functions, social life if you're incontinent, and it speaks into a very big taboo that that women live with. I've spoken to so many women who live with these hidden problems and pains,
Well, and
and
we talked before, if it was a man that this happened to, it would have a very different stigma and prioritization, but it's women and we need to have silent voices in the future of those frustrations.
And in many hospitals, the budget are based upon that the delivery is complete as soon as the placenta and the bleeding is under control. It's far from complete or done in my world for the women or for the body of the woman. She needs a thorough examination with consent, informed consent. And of course, she needs very well local anesthesia. We're talking global level now here. I know you're very good with epidurals in the US, which you can discuss in many ways. But when it comes to repairs, the epidurals are actually really good. But you know, they also have side effects when it comes to labor. Anyway, when it comes to repairs, I think that has to have so much more focus. And the midwives and the doctors need so much more training. And so in my department, we are very focused on having an open door policy when it comes to repairs. We are not allowed to diagnose by ourselves anymore. For instance, we have to be two clinicians to make sure that we don't oversee something. And it's also to create awareness that you can be insecure as a clinician. You can need training as a clinician. So it's okay to be two when you're repairing if there's hands and time for it. And I think that is so nice because we spend so much energy on checking women during pregnancy, ultrasound, blood work, you know, we fetal estimation, fetal weight estimation. Is she obese? Does she have GGM? Is she a smoker? All these things. And then we the same focus continues in labor. You know, we're so focused on the well-being of the baby, of the well-being of the mom, is there progress? And then we go out and we discuss with our colleagues, how should we promote the passive descent? Or she has the urge to push or rotate, or is it an occiput posterior? How should we rotate it? And then as soon as the baby's out, the bleeding's under control, the discussion stopped. And then we were alone, we were sitting there alone with this procedure. So I would like to bring that level, the discussion and the level of interest and the level of acceptance of incompetences, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
The acceptance that it
the
can be very
difficult. The quality standards not being so low, and yeah, the check and balance system, and having, I love how you guys have created outpatient evaluations. It's not just the US and a lot of the world, it's just, okay, because insurance and dictation and the system, you got to go back to work. You've got 6 week follow-up visit, but there's so much that happens. Like you said, we do tons and tons of minute by minute watching, and then the baby comes out, they leave the hospital, and we're like, okay, bye. We'll see you in 6 weeks.
Yeah, and you're all by yourself. And they, you know, I in my hospital, I check all the repairs, the complex second degree tears, and the episiotomies. I check between 3 to 5 days postpartum. They have to be referred by the one who sutured them. So if a midwife sits and sutures second degree tear, and she thinks it's quite complex, she refers the woman to me, or if it's been very edemous. And then I take pictures when they come. I take pictures of the good repairs and also the poorly ones. And then I do a secondary repair right there under local anesthesia. Mm-hmm. And the women, they absolutely, they are fearful of the visit, but they love the fact that we are taking them seriously. And they love the fact that there is an offer for them to come back to. I always tell them, I'm here every Monday. So if you have anything, then you know I'm here. You can always come in for a quick checkup. But it's just, it's something they can't cope looking down there. They can't cope thinking, because they're going home. This is not a knee surgery. This is a mom going home with a newborn baby. And it will always be the need of the baby that takes priority. And yeah. So we as clinicians, we as midwives should really take prioritizing in the breastfeeding, of course, but also the perineal health of that woman. I think it's degrading of women, if that's a very strong word, but I think we as midwives or as clinicians, this is a part of labor that needs so much more focus and right. training. I have sutured with so many clinicians and say, oh my God, you know, nobody's been watching me for years. And I don't really have a lot of training, and you're probably going to see funny techniques because I've been suturing alone for many years and all these things. And it just tells me that we all have the same insecurities sometimes. And also in my clinic or in my hospital, we use Alice forceps to actually identify the muscle and make sure we palpate on the skin when we pull the muscles. So we're not just aligning them so they look anatomically nice, but we're actually really fixing the engine room behind it, what they're going to use for Kegel exercises. So you shouldn't shouldn't suture unless you really have identified the muscle with a forcep, and then you can actually feel that you have the musculus transverse and you have the bulbus. Those are the one that keeps us in urine continent. So we tell the women, and also I think women deserves a lot more awareness of this in the pregnancy. And there's that fine balance between scaring and informing. But on the other hand, you know, they don't get scared. If we also tell them that there is a chance they will have a cesarean section, mm-hmm. You know, there's a very light chance, but there is a chance that the labor doesn't go well. And I don't see women are very well informed there. And it's also the way you present it, but it is 85% who do receive a tear. So of course we're trying to minimize the tear. We're trying to prevent them, but to actually take that big group seriously, the 85% of women, to take those seriously and actually say, this is what you can expect, and that your repair will take 20 to 30 minutes after giving birth, but you will receive local anesthesia. We do know that you are very tired and very exhausted, and at the same time, you're happy. So to kind of prepare them, I think, because a lot of women think it's their fault they got a tear, they think, that they belong to a very small group. They think that when they are feeling sore afterwards or in pain, that it's birth related, and they are in doubt whether they should seek someone to have a look. It's embarrassing for somebody to have a look. No, it's not embarrassing. I just think they deserve so much better.
Yeah.
And I think we as women should treat each other. I always suture everyone as if it was myself. And today I sutured one woman, and I looked at three repairs, and I assisted. I did a secondary repair on one. And it's like every woman has a story, and every woman has a birth, and they should leave the hospital with a very nice, they come into the hospital with contractions, and they're very aware of what's going to happen, and they should leave the hospital with a good birth experience, their head above the water, and they should have a pelvic floor that's well functioning, and it should be really sutured and taken care of. It has a very, very high priority in my world,
Yeah.
as you can hear.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's what's so important is as midwives, you found your passion, you found your niche, and you've taken it to the ultimate level, in my opinion. I mean, you're going to be solving challenges and problems for millions and millions of women with your invention, the Hagenberger retractor now, because it's more politically correct of what it's doing versus the original name was Hagenberger speculum. But if you can tell people about that invention problem, the process and the need, and like how you shifted from being a midwife to a business owner.
Well, I saw a problem, first of all, like many of us does. I saw it in different countries, and I saw it among doctors and midwives, and I also saw the effect it had on women. And I also saw the innovation and in within other procedures, other surgeries. We have non-invasive procedures, we have robotic surgery, we have, so many things. They take up a little camera, blow it up on a big HD screen so the surgeon can almost see on cell level. We have oh, there's that mine. Sorry. We have and then when it comes to repairing women, we use the fingers as retractors, we place local infiltration, they put their legs in stirrups in odd ways. Some hospitals don't ever put the legs up in stirrups, and you can say and that planted a big idea that we could actually improve how we do this procedure, the approach to this procedure, and but also for the economics of the midwives, because my left shoulder was always sore because you're tired after being a
Yeah,
midwife after
the
giving, and you
angle
sit
and
there and you actually it's kind of strenuous work, and you don't think about it because you have this adrenaline rush and you just want to get it over with so she can get her legs down. But it takes a lot more strain on your shoulder than you think. And you don't work related injuries, or it doesn't happen between Monday and Friday. It happens over a
over
time of
time, yeah.
period, and then suddenly one day it will hit you. And when you see how many other tools there are and other procedures. And then I've had a lot of criticism for putting women's legs up in leg rest, because some midwives find it very degrading that the women should be have their legs up. But I think if they know what's happening, if they give their verbal consent, if I sit much better, if I can see better, I think it's a much more better approach. She can relax her pelvic floor, she can relax the gluteal muscles that we need to have a look at. And I think it's very, very much degrading if you don't do a proper
Yeah.
examination.
Well, it's getting some of those personal biases because we don't say a pap smear is degrading, a well woman pelvic exam is degraded because it's linked to the birth process. And we have to like understand, okay, we need to well see this area. If I do it squatting and looking up, like I'm not going to be able to see well. Like, don't we, what's the highest priority of putting the woman at the top or being able to solve the problem that we want her to not have
And
lifelong
I think
issues
you
with?
can do something that's very ethical and very nice. I don't have any complaints from the women. Of course, you can do everything in the degrading way. You can even take a blood pressure that's degrading to any patient.
Yeah.
So it's about communication, and they understand what's going to happen and why. So I think you get a lot with clear information. If the women feel that you are there for them, you're going to do your absolutely best. So those are all little things I had. And then I started simply when I returned to Denmark after being in the US to actually answer your question. So I started
No, this is fine.
the prototyping back home in my house, and I kept it there a secret for about a year and a half until I actually had the prototype. And then the investors came along, and the company was established. And I last year I sold it to a British company because it needed to expand more on a global level. So we need the right team. So we have the right team on board. I'm still a part of the team. So it's very nice to see it growing. We're now in 24 or 5 countries, and among the US, which is really nice. And we're just starting in the US, but we are there. I actually flew over with my first retractors in November last year, and we visited hospitals on the East Coast, which was really interesting and very positive. So if midwives sit out there with good ideas, never ever let them go. I had my idea for 10 years before I actually started it. And in the beginning, I was debating with myself, should I take a master degree in something, or should I start the development of this? I have a lot of idea, but the retractor was the one that kept coming due to my work. I still work clinical, I'm still part-time, and I love work clinical. But if you have a good idea, never let it go. And then think of it as knitting at night. It's something that you can take out when you have the energy, and then you put it back. And I think that was one of the main reasons why I succeeded, because if I started too hard, too many hours, I would have, I had three
Burned out,
children.
yeah.
I would have burned out very easily. So I always looked at it as knitting. I could actually put it back in the closet. Nobody knew about it. There was no schedule. There was no pressure on being done at a timeline. And when I felt I was ready, then the snowball started to roll. So it's a very, I think that's a very important part in innovation process, that you don't make the snowball too big too quickly, but that you actually have the time to make it involve. I also spoke to a midwife once, and she's a very tall midwife, lovely old colleague, and she said, I want to design a birth bed, because she said they're way too low for me. I'm 2 meters tall, and I need to invent something that I can work with. But she said, I can never cope with, she thought she had to go in and do metal welding, what do you say, and build the
Yeah.
whole and her whole birth. I said, no, you have to make a tiny one for dolls. So you sit at home and you build it with toothpicks or something small with paper or cloth, because suddenly the project became copable, or what you say, capable. You can actually cope. And she was like, it was like 50 kilos came off her shoulders, and she was like,
Yeah.
oh yeah, I can do that. And then when you have the prototype, you take it to a machinery, or you take it to
The
a welder,
experts
and
that know all that, you leverage the experts around you. You've got the idea and the expertise in that area. And that's what's really important for midwives to hit home because so many of them have big ideas. And it's the mindset of thinking that self-employed, I'm the one that's best and know how to do it. I've got to do every step of the process. I've got to become an expert in every step of the process. And that's that
No, no,
shifting
no.
from to the business owner.
Also, to boiling it down to something that you can actually work with, that you feel, you can actually, you have the energy to work with it, instead of thinking you have to be a welding, you have to stand there with a welding and kilos of metal and building a big labor bed. So think outside the box when you're thinking outside the box. So that means, nurse your good ideas and make them something that you can actually work on and work with.
Well, and part of it's just the brainstorming process because maybe you don't know exactly how to solve the problem, but you get around some ladies. We had so much fun 2 years ago. I did a hosting of a business conference and we all went out for dinner afterwards and we got into a riot because one had like a botany background and other ones had all unique backgrounds. And in this state, the midwives, because it was illegal, they couldn't do lidocaine. They're like, is there something we can do besides suturing? And we were brainstorming, like, is there a glue we can make that breaks down in a few, like, we're But that's what it takes. It takes, you know, there's a challenge, but maybe you don't know the answer to how to fix it, but you just start talking and that momentum of connecting. Like, I didn't know this other midwife was a botanist and she's telling you about these fibrous glues and these things in some of these plant-based products. And so I think that's the inspiration, is just you see a challenge, you start talking, and you'll get connected with the people that can help you solve those problems.
Exactly. So there's so much innovation within midwifery, and I'm the second midwife since 1841 to develop an obstetric device. And hopefully there will be a third midwife very soon somewhere. There shouldn't be 200 years between us.
Yes.
I was beat it by the French, but it's just to inspire the midwives to actually think that it doesn't have to be engineers or doctors who come up with all. And I think it's so nice when you are suturing with the Hingburger, and also when midwives are suturing them, they're actually suturing with they're almost suturing with a colleague when they take the Hingburger out of the closet or out of the labor room, it's a midwife made tool. And I think it's kind of a nice signal.
I know a man made this. Like, yeah, this is not made by a woman. Yeah.
Yeah. And also when it comes to the innovation process, you know, you do your prototyping, but then that's, you know, you suddenly know that you need a little bit of grip here because you have gloves on, and, you know, there's all these little adjustments. So that the whole innovation process is, I think if you have it, if it's in your mindset, like it is in me, I have a lot of ideas, trust me, but this one is the one I went for. I might go for others later on, but this is my focus as of today. But if you have that mindset, and I always say to women or midwives, if you have something that you do on a regular basis in your department that really bothers you, think about what it actually is that's bothering you, and then how can you solve it? Because if it's bothering you, it's bothering a ton of other people. Right. And that was exactly the same with the Hingburger, because I was asking people, how do you feel about suturing? And they were like, oh, my wrists and my fingers are hurting, and especially teaching. And they're like, if you have a young student who's going to place her first two knots and it takes her like
slow
a long
and
time,
steady,
and you are tired in your back, maybe you had a water delivery and you are like, oh, I need to go out and have my coffee, you know, and it's always that dilemma, you know, she needs to learn, but at the same time you also need to do your paperwork, you want to go home, and the woman who's being sutured, you know, how big a price should she pay in time and waiting and, you know, being patient. But with the Hingburger, you can simply place it, and I just sit next to them. You know, my back is happy, my shoulders are happy. I can facilitate the communication in the room. So the whole suturing experience, the training increases tremendously, because you take out all the negative energy. The students can actually take her time. She sees what she's doing. She can correct. She can suture with correct suturing technique. I mean, with a needle holder and a forceps. And the woman is not in pain, because you don't have to touch all the
time. We're not slipping. It just, you would assume, like, you're like, oh, that's tons of pressure. But I'm like, it's the subtle constant moving that causes more of the discomfort, versus you put it, they feel some pressure, but it will definitely refer. It's an amazing invention, Maylene. We need more midwives like you, for sure.
They're out there. We just need to promote them and get them going. But I will inspire other midwives to actually to think big thoughts. You know, we know so much, we have so much knowledge in our hands and in our experience. Imagine how many women you know I have sutured, and if you are a new graduate, how many women you are going to suture. So so if I in any way can be a role model for other midwives to start an innovation process, and keep it a secret and share it only with people who've signed an NDA, it's very important not to.
Yeah, those are those business sides that people, they don't know what they don't know. Yeah, and a non-disclosure agreement when you brainstorm an idea and you meet with people, and especially when you've really went down and spent a lot of time prototyping it, you want to make sure, just like when you show a business plan and you're thinking of selling a practice or buying a practice, like, these are proper etiquettes of business that many midwives are foreign to, for sure.
Yeah. And I didn't know that either, you know. So it, you know, you learn as you go. And if you're an entrepreneur, you feel comfortable being in a field of landmines, because you know you never know what step you take that will be, or climbing a mountain. The top is unreachable because you have to keep learning. So it is a learning curve. But if you're comfortable being in that, and if you're not too hard on yourself, it's actually manageable. And you just make small milestones for yourself to reach. You know, don't look at the look only look at the end target, but just, you know, make small eatable milestones, or remember to look back. You know, I'm very poor at that, looking back and see what I've actually accomplished.
The progress, yeah, what it
and
took
I
to
get
get
that
there.
I think that's the same with you. You know, you are a fast forward person, and sometimes it's important to look in the turn around and look what you actually accomplished. As a businesswoman. So I think I really hope that you and I can inspire other midwives in different ways.
Yeah, I think it's exciting. Yeah, I'll definitely put a plug. People reach out to Heggenberger Medical. They now have FDA approval in the US, and it's a phenomenal tool. I can see the benefits for community-based midwives, avoiding unnecessary transfers, pain perceptions in the hospital, unnecessary going back to the OR. I mean, there's so much benefits. We just got to get you in front of the key decision makers of the hospitals in the US and the midwives. So definitely a Malene Heggenberger Retractor. It's a phenomenal invention. It's going to change the face of how we look at repairs. The other thing I would love to add is one of our newest consultants on our team, Sandra Multiva. She's from Canada and originally Argentina. She wants to help midwives with patents and innovations, part of the consulting work. So if people are interested and have great ideas, definitely reach out to our consulting team. Go to the Midwifery Business Consultation tab, and Sandra would love to help you. The ideas she brings up you all the time, because she's like, there's only two midwives that have made inventions, and she wants to change that as well. So yeah, her
no,
and you and Sandra will get along famously.
Very nice.
Yeah. So Malene, any like closing words you want to give to midwives so I can let you get to dinner? I appreciate your precious time. I know this isn't an easy process. It takes time. What words of wisdom would you give any midwife that has a great idea and just doesn't even know where to start?
You know, I think it's about, you know, make a list. Make a list of three things you're doing every day for your goal. I did that in the beginning. Three things I wanted to do. It could be very small things. It could be a phone call. It could be putting down some lines to a speech or something very, very simple. But make three goals each day and cross them out. And then you can go to bed and say, I've done progress. I think it's so important to minimize, you know, it's not you're not going to write a PhD every day, but just to make it so that you can cope, because you're going to cope for a long run. You have to put the high beams on. You have to really look far. And you have to survive everyday activities. You need fitness. You need to take care of yourself, your family, your ordinary job. So three things. Monday, Wednesday, or Friday, or something like that. It doesn't have to be every day, but make a schedule so you can cope and keep the progress. That keeps the momentum and the snowball going. And then some days you will do five things, which is good. And then you can take a break and only do one thing the next time.
Yeah.
Just, you know, I did that in the beginning, three things. That was the priority on my list. And then I put down the less prioritizing things I had to do in the bottom, but I always had three prioritizing for making progress.
Yeah. Well, I think as midwives, we are so, it's got to be perfect and awesome and amazing, or we don't half-ass things. We want everything to be perfect for our family and our personal life. And sometimes we feel like, man, I'm not making progress. I'm just going to give up, versus slow and steady wins the race. Cause you're going to have kids sick. You're going to have all of a sudden extra hours. You're going to go on vacation. Life happens. And I think sometimes our business ideas, our dreams get pushed to the wayside. But I love your idea of just slow and steady, always keeping it in the forefront, always keeping, like I have a notebook wherever I'm at, I have a notebook in my nightstand. And so ideas just go on it. Maybe I'm not going to work on this idea today, but you want to inspire those ideas to continue and grow. And then you start thinking, okay, it's at this stage of where I want to be. Now I'm going to propose it to some investors. Now I'm going to, I've taken it to as far as my skills can do, and now I'm ready. So I love how you kept it a secret for a year and a half. And
I still have my, you know, I still have all my little notes, you know, and this is all my memory, you know, so you know, just keep it on a very nice, low, practical level and keep the momentum.
Well, and I think of you often because last time we chatted, you had a box of prototypes. Like, you're not going to just make one. Like, you did it over and over again. I mean, Edison, when he made the light bulb, he talks it was like 1,000 times. Like, you're so close to greatness, and that it may take you a few times to figure it out. Now you're not the kinks. But that's what makes the difference between good to great, is you get past the challenges. You get past and know this is just part of the process. Versus I did something wrong. I think too many people think, well, it must have not been a good idea. Your box of prototypes would say differently.
Yes, I made 88 prototypes. So that's, so it takes time and you learn something different every time. But as you say, it's not a mistake. It's progress.
Yes, process, progress. So I think part of it is our mindset. You know me, my whole intent is to shift the midwife mindset to think outside the box, to know we have so much potential in us, that entrepreneurial spirit to bring out, even if it's a side hustle or international invention, whatever capacity your entrepreneurial spirit takes you to. But midwives have so much more than catching babies that a lot of us put ourselves in the box of, that we can impact in the greater women's healthcare arena. So thank you, Maylene, for doing everything that you've done so far.
Well, thank you so much for listening to my story. And I hope we will inspire other midwives.
I think we will. I mean, I think the whole point is you and I we're not special. Like, I mean, we're just the average midwife. We just chose a different path that the average one doesn't. So it takes courage to say, I have greatness in me to go XYZ pathway. So all of us have it in us. It's just a matter of when we start listening to that part of ourselves.
Exactly.
So, well, thank you so much, Maylene, and you have a wonderful day.
Thank you. You too.